all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Jim Fossone.
And good afternoon, Veteran Radio listeners. We're glad to have you aboard. We've got an exciting show. We're going to talk today a little bit about the future. We've often talked on Veterans Radio about historical things in the past. Well, today we're going to talk about laser warfare, so we're kind of looking into the future. So get ready for that, but before we start there, we're going to talk a little bit about a local event that's coming up that needs some support. So we have on the line Bill Fowler, who is with Northville High School, and they are going to bring the Vietnam War Wall Memorial to Northville High School. Bill, say hello to the Veterans Radio listeners.
Hello, everybody.
And
hello, everybody.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you got coming up?
Okay, well, every year I'm an assistant varsity coach at Northville High School. I coach baseball there, and every year we have an Armed Forces Day. This year we wanted to make it a little bit bigger, so we decided to bring the Vietnam War Wall Memorial into Northville. It'll be from May 14th to May 17th that we're going to bring it in.
And where will it be set up, Bill?
So the high school is right on 6 Mile between Sheldon and back to Northville, and it is going to be set up right on the east corner, the front side of the high school. So if you drive by on 6 Mile, you will absolutely be able to see it.
And do you have some partners helping you bring this together and pull it off?
Yeah, I do. We're working with the Freedom Center, which I'm not sure if you know about the Freedom Center, but there's one out in Troy. There's one at the Detroit Metro Airport, and then they just opened one up last weekend in Lansing. Those guys help a lot of our young people who are transitioning out into the service, and they've been a great partner with us.
So if I want to visit the Vietnam Moving Wall, I can do it May 14th through the 17th in Northville, Michigan. But if I want to help you with some funding to bring the wall to the southeast Michigan area during that period of time, how do we help out?
Well, yeah, certainly. Anybody can email me, and I can shoot them out. I've got a GoFundMe account out there that's helping us raise some funds to bring the wall in. But they can email me at bill@precisionbaseball1.com. Or certainly anybody could call me, 248-761-9694. We're accepting all kinds of donations and sponsors and everything. And yeah, the big thing is, you know, on Saturday the 16th, we're having a doubleheader as well. We do a bunch of collections for troops overseas, and we work with the Freedom Center to ship those overseas to our guys.
Well, that's great. We just wanted to take a few minutes to get this program out so people can start planning on attending, and also to have them have your email address and your phone number so that they can help financially. I have your phone number at 248-761-9694. You can call Bill and tell him you heard him on Veterans Radio. And the email address again, Bill, is?
It's bill@precisionbaseball1, and one is spelled out O-N-E.com. Bill@precisionbaseball1.com.
Okay, well, I think that's a great way to combine passion for the all-American sport of baseball and youngsters with honoring veterans and certainly our veterans from the Vietnam era. Thanks for coming on, Bill, and we will continue to follow this and promote this as the date approaches.
Thank you so very much for your time. Appreciate it.
You got it, Bill. And we're going to do another quick info here on an upcoming event a little closer. And I'd like our listeners to welcome Chris Franklin from the American Indian Veterans of Michigan organization. Chris, say hello to the veteran radio listeners.
Hello, everybody.
And Chris, why don't you tell us a little bit about the American Indian Veterans of Michigan and your upcoming event?
All right. American Indian Veterans of Michigan. We're, first of all, I'm a proud member of Vietnam Veterans of America 154. I'm a Vietnam era Coast Guard veteran. And our event is, Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans Day on, March 30th. We have a free dinner. We have, we run movies. We run music. We have, it's just a come in and sit down and fraternize with the fellow veterans. And we've sponsored this for the last 4 years.
And Chris, where's the location for this, upcoming event on March 30th?
It's 26641 Lawrence. That's in Centerline, Michigan. 48015.
And it's at the Southeastern Michigan Indian Center, as I understand?
Yes, it is. Yes.
And why don't you, again, tell us a little bit about what the American Indian Veterans of Michigan does.
Well, first of all, the Native American veterans have served in every major war and conflict in the United States. Our enlistment rate per capita is the highest of any ethnic group in the country. Our group was formed about 4 years ago under the mentorship of Buck Otipo, who is also a Vietnam veteran and Sault Ste. Marie tribe elder. And he gave us many teachings about to help us and remind us about the Michigan Sharpshooters, Company K. They were comprised of Ojibwe, Odawa, and Potawatomi tribes. In other words, it was a native company of riflemen serving in the Army in the late 1800s. We carry a flag of their sacrifices and honorable service to this country. There is a memorial dedicated to the Company K on the Capitol grounds in Lansing, Michigan. Our mission statement is to honor and assist all veterans. Our assistance includes transportation for veterans to hospital appointments, food assistance, referrals to service officers if needed, for medical and entitlements.
Well, Chris, that's great work. I think some of the national VSOs kind of always get the limelight, so I'm glad to have an opportunity to give some focus on your organization. Is it affiliated with the national organization?
No, we're not. We started about 4 years ago on our own, and we're just a small group, a handful of people, and we just got together and decided we wanted to try to do something for the community. Beginning January the 1st of this year, we were awarded a grant with the Michigan Department of Community Health for a pilot project to assist veterans in smoking cessation through an evidence-based program in the Michigan Quit Line. We currently are in the process of circulating a survey regarding tobacco use amongst several veteran organizations. This will be a significant help in developing protocols specific for veterans. I'm currently on the board with Tobacco Free Michigan and a member of the Michigan Multicultural Network, representing the veteran community in both. The MCN is comprised of Native Americans, Asians, Arabs, African American, and Hispanic Latino ethnic communities, as well as the LGBTN veterans, all communities which have been disparately impacted by commercial tobacco use.
Well, we had a chance to talk a little bit about that at a Veteran Community Action Team meeting, a VCAT meeting in Redford.
Yes.
That's how we met each other, and there isn't anybody who's ever served who hasn't heard of smoke 'em if you got 'em.
Right.
So, yeah, the problem is prevalent, and I'm glad to see that your organization is helping to tackle that with the state and the grant for smoking cessation. So one more time, let's give the listeners where your welcome home is on March 30th, 2015.
It's 26641 Lawrence. It's in Centerline, Michigan. If you Google it, it's Southeastern Michigan Indians, and it's 48015.
Well, thanks for coming on Veterans Radio and allowing us to get the word out about your organization as well as your upcoming event. And we'll try to keep track of that, Chris, and you can always let us know how it went so we can continue to promote those things that your organization is doing.
I appreciate that very much.
Well, listeners, I think those are two great events to put on your calendar and kind of keep track of. We're going to go to a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll come back with our first guest, Sam Legrone from the U.S. Naval Institute.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And welcome back to Veterans Radio here at WAM 1600 AM out of Ann Arbor. Whether you're listening locally or on the Internet at veteransradio.net, we're glad to have you on board. And our topic today, our guest today, is Sam Legrone. Sam, say hello to the Veterans Radio listeners.
How's it going, Jim?
It's going well. Thanks for joining us. Sam is the U.S. Naval Institute online editor. It's a fancy name, Sam. What's that actually mean?
Well, I run USNI News, which is the two-year-old news service that the Naval Institute out of Annapolis, Maryland, started back in 2013. So our mission is to provide independent, nonpartisan, unbiased information about the sea services out to our readership throughout the world.
Well, this really does have an international reach, and USNI is certainly a leader in the field. Sam, you come at it with some experience. Why don't you tell us a little bit about where you did your undergrad and graduate work and where you worked at before you got to the U.S. Naval Institute?
Sure, Jim. I'm a 2003 graduate of Virginia Military Institute down in Lexington. And I was a daily newspaper reporter before I started working for James Defense Weekly, best known for James Fighting Ships, and a lot of other reference publications. But I was the U.S. Maritime Correspondent for James for about 2.5 years before I came on over to the Naval Institute. So it's been about the last 5 years or so covering the Navy and Marine Corps almost exclusively.
Well, I know you're both deep and wide in this area from the things that I've read your reporting online and elsewhere, and it's one of those things that caught my attention, and we reached out to U.S. Naval Institute and to you to talk to us a little bit about the U.S. Navy deploying last summer a laser defense system in the Persian Gulf. You wrote about this last December. Let's start with the basics. What can you tell us about the laser weapon system?
Sure. It's called LAWS, or Laser Weapon System. The acronym isn't super fancy, but, you know, they use the second A, or the A in lasers to make LAWS. But it's a 30 kilowatt laser system that's been installed on board the USS Ponce. And the USS Ponce is an afloat forward staging base in the Persian Gulf. So it used to be an amphibious warship hauling Marines around the world as part of amphibious ready groups and Marine expeditionary units. But it's an older ship, and they decommissioned it for its high-end amphibious mission and turned it into a platform to go and launch special operations forces off of, or use as a platform for helicopters that go and hunt mines and neutralize mines that might exist out into the Persian Gulf. But the Office of Naval Research, which does a lot of experimentation for sort of emerging technologies for the Navy and the Marine Corps, decided that, hey, we've got this great big warship out there. Why don't we go and potentially use it as a platform for a directed energy weapon, or which is a fancy way of saying a laser. And they put it out there it's been out there for about a year now. And the big news was back in December when the folks over in charge of U.S. Fifth Fleet, which is the operating group for the Navy in the Middle East, decided to allow the skipper of the Ponce to use the weapon as needed in an operational context, which means if there was a threat to the ship and then the laser was the best option to deal with it, you could use a laser, and that was the big news in December, that there is an operational laser the U.S. Navy is using. So that might be kind of a longer wind-up than you needed, Jim.
That's excellent. Part of what I was like you to talk about is sort of the rules of engagement. When they finally said, okay, Skipper, you can use this piece of equipment as you see fit in defense of the ship, what were the rules of engagement?
So the rules of engagement, the Navy hasn't really specified exactly what they are, but what we do know is you can't use them directly against people. So there's a video, and you can find that online. If you go to news.usni.org and you search for laser weapon system, the first story that will pop up will have a link to a video on YouTube. And it shows a bunch of small craft, like small boats coming up towards the Ponce during a weapons test. And one thing that they go and they do in the test is there'll be a mannequin with an RPG round or a rocket-propelled grenade round ready to go. So what the operator of the laser is allowed to do is they're allowed to focus the energy on the RPG round. So it's not like a bullet, where, you know, there's an immediate kinetic effect. It takes sometimes a second, sometimes a couple of seconds for the laser to actually detonate the explosives in the RPG round. But what the operators of the lasers are not allowed to do because of their rules of engagement, or ROE as folks call it, is actually target an individual person. So you can blow up an engine, or you can blow up an RPG round, and whatever collateral damage that happens from the explosion of the RPG round and the fragmentation that ensues is fair game, but actually using the laser on a person is not allowed.
So a lot of comments online about the Geneva Convention and whether or not this distinction in the rules of engagement makes any sense. I can blow up the engine, or I can blow up the RPG, but I can't aim it at a individual. So it's some of that's still probably going to be debated for a long period of time.
I think that's an ongoing. You know, it's not for me or the Naval Institute to say whether or not those rules of engagements make sense. But I think you know, given the makeup of your listeners, debates on the Geneva Convention and rules of engagement and the actual practicality of them have been going on as long as the document has been drafted.
Certainly.
So it's been
certainly. Yeah. So this weapon is primarily a defensive weapon as it currently exists, Sam, or is this just we're in an evolutionary period as the Navy rolls this out?
It's more of the latter. It's an experimental weapon for sure. I mean, it's, the biggest thing that the Navy, or one of the largest things that the Navy is thinking about now in its surface fleet is next generation weapons. So if you look at the way that the Navy is structured at the moment in their surface fleet, is a lot of the weapons, or a lot of the effort on the offensive side of the United States' guided missile cruiser and destroyers, the high end of the surface fleet is oriented around very expensive missiles. So you have standard missiles linked up to very high-end radar systems, and these missiles can cost in the millions of dollars. Even if you're doing like a sort of a lower-end missile, well, I mean, again, this is all relative, but a lower-end missile like a Tomahawk land attack for a land strike, you know, you're still looking at about $1 million a shot, and it's really expensive. And, you know, you're driving around in a cruiser and you're driving around in a destroyer, and then you have all of this explosives and rocket propellants, and you have to protect them and armor them and stuff like that. And so they're expensive and they're dangerous. And what the Navy would really, really love to do is figure out a way to take off all of these explosives and take off all of this rocket propellant off of the ship, and then instead have something that's as effective and it's also cheaper. So the two big technologies that have been on the horizon for a while now that the Navy's been exploring has been directed energy, like a laser, and then an electromagnetic railgun, which uses sort of the same power that the Disney monorails run off of, opposing magnetic forces to launch a projectile at hypersonic speeds. And those are the two technologies that are those are the two technologies that are in play right now, really, with the Navy. And the LAWS system on the Ponce is kind of the first practical expression of that. And right now it is more or less a defensive weapon. It could blow up an unarmored engine on a small, like, speedboat. The Navy calls them fast attack craft. And the that's a useful tool against that. Small unarmored unmanned aerial vehicles, drones, as they're commonly called, is another potential use. If your listeners want to go to news.usni.org and search for the LAWS, L-A-W-S, weapon system, there's a video that Office of Naval Research has put out that shows some of the practical testing on how they're able to take out the surface targets and the aerial targets.
Those videos are very compelling. But before we get a little deeper here, let's back up. How is this system comprised? How is it, is this all proprietary government equipment, or how did they come up with the system that they tested?
Well, it's an experimental program from ONR, and it's mostly proprietary. And when pressed on sort of the details on who built what, ONR really isn't talking as to this person built this and this person built this. And so it's being presented as a prototype developed pretty much from ONR material. So I'm assuming that's what it is at the moment. As far as the assemblage, it doesn't operate off of ship's power. They have a sled that essentially has a big diesel motor on there that gives it the amount of electrical energy that it needs to operate, and it has a bunch of proprietary high-end optics to focus the energy of the laser that they're really not going into a whole lot of details about.
Well, I certainly wouldn't expect them to talk about their proprietary stuff, but I think it was reported in your piece and some others that there were commercial laser components used here, and then combined with the proprietary Navy software. And I thought that was interesting that if I'm reading this right, that they're using both available commercial components as well as sort of a proprietary software.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So they're using – I'm sorry if I wasn't clear on that. Yes, there are commercial components being used here, and they're being augmented by – research and components that developed inside of ONR to go and create the final LAWS system.
And you said, Sam, that there's a big cost differential that a regular Tomahawk missile's $1 million a shot. What's it cost to deploy the laser weapon?
The former head of the Office of Naval Research, Admiral Klunder, said that it was about 35 cents to a dollar for a shot from the laser.
Well, that's a bit of a price differential.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. I think the Is there a plan in place for how they're going to scale this up? Is this the one that was on the Ponce? Is that the size that they're going to head towards, or is there more to come?
I think there's more to come. So one of the, I think some people get a little frustrated with some of the technological developments that come out of ONR, because ONR is mainly, very much on the experimental end. It's like, what can we go and figure out? How can we, look at a particular technology, and can we make it useful? Can we not make it useful? But there's the path from that examination to production and putting it on ships is usually circuitous and not very clear. So the next step for ONR is they're probably going to leave this laser out on a Ponte for a while until they get a little bit more information. And the next step that they've said that they wanted to do is probably come up with a more powerful weapon to bring back out. Because, again, so we're talking about the laser weapon system. It's only about 32 kilowatts, I believe, which is enough to blow up an RPG round or a rocket-propelled grenade around with just a little bit of focused energy on there for just a couple of seconds at the most. But they're looking to go and develop lasers for faster targets and more better protected targets. And as the program evolves inside ONR, it's going to be a larger laser and a more powerful laser. Well, the size of it might not be bigger, but it would be a more powerful laser to go and take on more sophisticated targets. It's very much a, you know, we're crawl, walk, run approach. And then once ONR is sort of gone through all of the evolutions that they can with the equipment that they have, you know, then you've got other elements in the Navy who may or may not decide that the technology deserves a type of a production run. So hopefully that wasn't too complicated an answer, because then you're starting to get into the Pentagon acquisition, and that's a whole other
problem. So Sam,
monstrous conversation.
Sam, stay on the line. We're going to you're going to stay with us after the news for a little bit. If you want to call in and ask a question, it's 844-838-1600, and we'll bring this conversation back to you right after the news. So more on laser weapon systems that the Office of Naval Research is developing for the defense of our men and women who are serving on ships abroad.
Conway Truckload honors the service of American military men and women with an apprenticeship program that allows veterans to use the GI Bill to supplement their income during their first year driving, as well as tuition reimbursement when they begin. Conway Truckload wants to continue the tradition of service right here at home. To learn more, call 866-WORK-FOR-US or visit online truetoblue.com/military.
And welcome back to Veterans Radio. We're talking to Sam LeGrand from U.S. Naval Institute. He's the editor of the online news version. We're talking about the laser weapon system that the U.S. Navy deployed on the USS Ponce last year and authorized the skipper to use as necessary in defense of the ship. Sam, another question that I have for you is, in your research on this reporting, did you get any understanding as to sort of how how many seamen it takes to operate this kind of equipment, or what type of skill set they have to have? It seems to me this is a radical change from loading the big guns on a destroyer.
Oh, absolutely. But the biggest change is really having to do with the actual the pointiest end of the kill chain, as they like to call it. The controls that the operators use for the LAWS or laser weapon system on the ship are pretty similar. The Navy has told us to some of the remote weapons that exist right now. So you've got on some of the ships in the service, you've got 30 millimeter weapons that have a camera on the end, and you do a lot of your targeting not from right where the weapon is, like with some of your smaller arms on the, for example, like a 50 cal off the side of a ship. You're not directly engaged physically with a human connection to the weapon, but you're more or less firing by wire, and you have a terminal inside the combat information center inside the ship, and you operate that almost like a video game, moving around a joystick and looking at a computer monitor. And the way that the LAWS terminal operates, more or less the same way. So you're looking at about, you're looking at an operator who has to go and do the targeting mission in a very similar way to existing systems. So the actual targeting of it is not all that different. On the maintenance side, it's the Navy hasn't really specified on how much the extra crew detachment is to go and service that. But it's a relatively, you know, relatively uncomplicated relative to, you know, some of the more kind of older gun systems and probably a little simpler in some respects, not having to deal with, you know, gunpowder residue or, you know, cleaning barrels and stuff like that.
Any idea what the noise out of this thing is when shot?
That's a great question. No. As it shows up in the internet, I think people like to use the G.I. Joe's pew pew sound.
Right.
The No, that's a great question. I have no idea.
For those of us who work with veterans who served many years ago, we see a lot of hearing loss claims from Navy vets who worked in very noisy environments, and I sort of see this as a bit of a game changer in the way it's implemented on the ship and the impact on those on board the ship, actually.
That's a really great point that I haven't heard anybody bring that up before, because you're right. You know, any ship, there's a lot of noise, especially if you're looking at a guided missile cruiser and destroyer that's there to sling standard missiles all over the place that are not quiet. So if you look at the Navy's future weapon systems, you've got the lasers, which will probably be pretty quiet, but the rail guns might not be. Those might be also pretty loud, but maybe not as loud as some of the old, you know, 5-inch guns that are out there now, or some of the larger ones from some of the older decommissioned ships.
So it seems to me that with this weapon system, the LAWS laser weapon system, we're moving more to sort of optics and electronics and software packages. That's really new Navy stuff, isn't it?
The digital Navy, the network Navy, is absolutely the way the service is going at the moment. So if you look at LAWS in the larger context of what's happening, specifically with the U.S. Navy Surface Forces and the Aviation Forces, it's moving towards a more electronically connected, digitally networked force designed to share information as fast as possible to go and disseminate that out to as many folks that could potentially take action against an aggressive target or use the intelligence for presence missions. I mean, just on and on and on. The Navy's actually coming probably next month or in April. The Navy's going to deploy its first network integrated. It's got a pretty dull acronym for something that's pretty exciting. It's Naval Integrated Fire Control Counter Air, or NICA, where the carrier strike group is all networked together. So it turns the strike group into an array of sensors and shooters. So I have for example, I have a aviation asset that sees an air warfare threat, and it can relay that relay targeting information to a cruiser or destroyer that's out of radar range, but not out of range to fire a missile. So all of a sudden, you have this network of sensors and shooters that are going to be able to go and feed all of that information all over the carrier strike group. And that's, you know, just one expression. And LAWS is another one about using the intelligence that you gain from the weapon itself. Because in addition to being able to go and use the laser as a weapon, it's essentially having a big telescope on the front of the ship. So you can go and point it at everything. So I think a couple of folks describe it as having the Hubble, the Hubble telescope of the sea mounted, you know, right above the bridge.
So the Navy is going to test this carrier strike group fire control system next month, did you say?
Well, the first, so the Theodore Roosevelt Carrier Strike Group is going to be the first NIFCA, or Naval Integrated Fire Control Counter-Air capable carrier strike group. So there's aircraft on the TR now that are part that can wire into this scheme. There's going to be a cruiser and a destroyer that go underway with the carrier that are wired into the screen. Wired into the scheme of NIFCA, and then the carrier itself. It has just come out of its midlife upgrade and refueling, and it's been they put a bunch of new antennas and a bunch of new capabilities on the carrier to be able to go and move forward with this NIFCA concept.
Well, this really is a whole new world for the digital and network Navy. Listeners to Veterans Radio really appreciate getting sort of an inside peek from you, Sam Legron of the U.S. Naval Institute. And I suspect you might be writing about this in the next month or two. And if so, how do people continue to follow all the good reporting that you're doing?
Well, we're in a bunch of different places. You can go directly to the website, and the website is newsnews.usni.org. We do three or four posts a day during the week. On the website, you can sign up for a daily or weekly email that'll send you out a daily rundown pretty early, 5 o'clock on the East Coast time, about everything that we've been up to. And then we're also on Facebook, it's facebook.com/U.S. Naval Institute. And then we're also on Twitter, and you could find us in any of those places. But we're always happy to talk to folks or answer questions on anything related to the Navy, the Marine Corps, and the Coast Guard.
Well, Sam, thank you for taking some time out today to talk to the Veteran Radio audience. This has been very interesting to look into the future of what the digital and network Navy is going to look like going forward, and how this laser defense system was deployed at sea. We'd like to bring on the experts, and you folks at USNI certainly fit that category. And if you're into knowing what's going on with our Navy, you certainly can join USNI.org. They have a very inexpensive program to be a member of the Institute, and really get all sorts of good information on what's happening with our sea services. Sam, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jim.
And right after words, these words from our sponsor, we'll continue to pick up this discussion about lasers, and we'll fold it into defense of drones right after these words.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And welcome back to Veterans Radio. Hopefully you're listening on WAM 1600 Talk Radio in the Ann Arbor area, or on the web through our veteransradio.net listen live site. We certainly also encourage you down the road to pick up our podcasts of our programs. It can be done at podbros.com, and there's a link on our site to get you there as well. If on the podcast we cut it down a little bit, make it a little quicker, and let you get 20 minutes of good interviews with as quickly as possible. And we're pleased to have back on the line Dan Gettinger from Bard College, specifically from the Center for the Study of the Drone. Dan, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be back.
Well, we spoke, last month now, about drones, and you followed a Colonel Wilson talking about the remote piloted aircraft that was being stood up here in Michigan, and gave us a lot of good insights on what's going on with UAVs or RPAs or drones, depending on your choice of words. And we just heard from Sam LeGrand from USNI about the laser weapon system that the Navy's deployed, and you've ridden on that as well and sort of ridden about the intersection between lasers and their use in the defense of drones. So I thought I'd have you back and talk a little bit about this.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm happy to. I wrote about the Chinese, primarily about the Chinese development of their own laser. I'm very glad to be following Sam. That was a lot of great information that he gave.
So tell us a little bit about what China is doing. I think oftentimes we sit here thinking we're developing these cool systems to help protect our country. We don't necessarily think about how that proliferates around the world and how quickly it does. And I think that's one of the things that your article brought to bear.
Right. So thank you. Yeah. So China, towards the end of last year, November, they made an announcement that they had conducted a successful test of their own laser system, and they had shot down a number of UAVs, of drones, not the big Predators or Reapers or anything, but the small quadcopters that you see a lot of hobbyists flying around today. So they say that their laser is about 10 kilowatts, which is about a third of the power of the laser that your previous guest, Sam, was talking about, the Navy's laser, which I believe is around 30 kilowatts. So they said they conducted a successful test, shot down a bunch of drones. And so the predominant view is that China's developing this laser system, because it's afraid of, domestic terrorism. So whereas the Navy's drone that we just heard about, could be deployed on ships, and potentially an offensive, forward deployed capability, China's much more worried about domestic threat of terrorism, and particularly the use of drones, in some kind of potential terrorist attack.
That's interesting. Do they have a is it a mobile device then that they, or are these stationary devices? Did the Chinese news service give you any insight into what they're testing?
So my understanding, of course, it's all a bit unclear because it is China we're talking about here. But my understanding is that right now these are just in a stationary position. Potentially in the future, these could be located on trucks for mobility. Right now, my understanding is that these are stationary lasers.
I don't think when we spoke last time, Dan, we talked much about drones or UAVs being moved into a weapon system or a delivery mechanism by terrorists. Your reporting and researching shed some light on that.
Yeah, so this is a growing point of interest for a lot of people who are watching the proliferation of drones around the world. And to be honest, I mean, right now there's really not much threat that we know of, that are posed by any, terrorist-made drones. But it is a rising concern. And in particular, Hamas and Hezbollah during the last, Gaza war, they did fly a drone into Israel. Israel shot it down with a Patriot missile. And so that right there is a perfect example of what Sam was talking about, as you were talking about earlier. The price disparity, right? The Patriot costs around $2 to $3 million. This drone probably costs a couple thousand dollars to build. So really and Israel is developing its own laser defense system called the Iron Beam. So really these laser defense systems are to protect against, these sort of these really cheap and very small drones or other projectiles.
And is there much cooperation between, say, in Israel and the United States in developing these kinds of systems?
I believe there is. Israel's project is quite secret. It's made by making a system by Rafael, which is an Israeli defense contractor, and they unveiled it last year at the Singapore Air Show. So it also is, another system in development, and It also is, the idea would be for it to be mobile, the way it would work would be that two lasers would concentrate on an incoming object. So I believe there is cooperation. I mean, of course, the United States and Israel defense communities are very close, so it would not be surprise me if there was close cooperation on this matter.
And what's being reported in terms of the distance of laser defense systems, their capabilities? What's the zone in which they can operate?
So the Chinese laser, they say, can operate within a 2-kilometer radius. So obviously that's not, you know, it's not a huge distance. And of course, weather conditions also affect the effectiveness of these lasers. So right now, of course, these systems, as your earlier guest mentioned, are really in the development phase. But, you know, the successful tests by these countries, and particularly by the U.S. Navy, really represents a massive jump in capability. And so I think, you know, the United States has been on the path towards developing lasers for 30-odd years, and it's only in recent years that this technology has made a really big stride.
I think as we look at this kind of technology, we lose maybe track of the fact that some really common adverse weather conditions can disrupt the accuracy or effectiveness of it, and you've reported a little bit on those things. Maybe you can talk about that a bit more.
Yeah, exactly. You know, clouds, any kind of condensation, I guess, in the air would definitely affect the, my understanding would definitely affect the range and the strength of these lasers. I mean, the Chinese media last year even said that their best defense against lasers was the smog that's covering their cities. that was in 2014. So, you know, I don't know how serious they were in saying that, but it's definitely a big issue to overcome with lasers.
Well, you can really think about that, and maybe that's why the Navy's out testing it where it is, because things like sea spray or fog or intense rains, what have you, sounds like it would have an impact on the effectiveness of a laser weapon system.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, these lasers are really designed for defense and for defense against, you know, small projectiles or small fast speedboats, like your previous guest was talking about. You know, swarms of these. Old, very cheap projectiles, electrons, is what this system would be used for.
So in some reporting that was done in Stars and Stripes, they indicated that on the Ponce, it was a Lieutenant JG, a female, who was the officer in charge of the laser weapon system aboard the ship. And there was some discussion about the lieutenant who was in charge of maintenance on the weapon system. I think with drones or RPAs, we found that the troops have a certain psychological reaction to working with drones. Have you thought about how this new laser weapon system is going to impact the troops that have to deploy it?
That's an interesting point. I had not really thought about that. I mean, I think the unique psychological or emotional issues that face drone pilots are pretty unique to those outfits those crew members. Primarily because of the fact that, you know, they're in the United States and they're operating, you know, in active theater of operations. In Afghanistan or Iraq or such places, but I think with lasers it would really, again, it would be particularly with the shipborne lasers, they would be forward deployed. So I think that, you know, they would I don't see the same sort of emotional and psychological challenges facing them.
I think that's certainly true, Dan. When these are defensive weapons, and being deployed the way they're currently, at least reporting they're being deployed. But it does sort of seem like we're moving into an era where it's all about sensors and shooters, if you will. You get the digital, you get the whole digital network of the Navy feel for this, and have you looked at or thought about how those requirements, skill sets are changing for those who serve our country?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think, you know, with these new weapon systems, drones, lasers, the ultimate goal is to reduce the risk for our service members. So, you know, I think in that sense, there is a similar, you know, the trend is similar for drones and for lasers. I think the impact for the servicemen and women who operate lasers will be similar to that of drones, in the sense that, yeah, they're reducing risk, they're putting greater distance between our servicemen and the enemies, and in a way, you know, these systems recognize the fact that war is going to be heading more towards relying on drones and, you know, small projectiles to really overwhelm the defenses of the enemy. I think there will be less, you know, face-to-face combat in the future when you have these sort of systems advancing and each trying to obtain an asymmetric advantage over the other.
And Dan, tell us a little bit about the Center for Study of the Drone at Bard College and a little bit about Bard College and how folks can follow your research and reporting.
Yeah, thank you. So the Center for the Study of the Drone is an interdisciplinary research and education program. We're nonpartisan. We don't have a policy agenda. We're just interested in studying drones from a lot of different perspectives. Our website is dronecenter.bard.edu, and we put out a great roundup every week of drone news, of commentary, arts, tech news. So everything you want to know about drones is in that roundup. So you can go to it and subscribe to it on our website, dronecenter.bard.edu.
And although you and I have been talking about the military application the last couple of times you've been on, the work at the center is not just focused on military application.
Exactly. We're just as interested in the domestic applications of drones and really sort of the unique uses that people are putting these machines towards. So that's really a bit of an obsession, really, is finding out what these machines are being used for and what we can expect them to be used for in the future.
Well, we're thankful for you spending a little time with us this afternoon. Dan Gettinger from Bard College and the Center for the Study of the Drone. We encourage folks to follow you on your research and reporting. Sign up for that weekly news blast, because it is across the whole field, not just military application. It's very interesting stuff. If you have any interest at all as sort of where technology is taking us and what its application may be. So I want to thank you again, Dan, for coming on this afternoon.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Well, veteran radio listeners, a couple of weeks back we had on Colonel Wilson talking about some of the work that the 110th Attack Wing here in Battle Creek, Michigan was undertaking, and its remote piloted aircraft wing. Just this week, the Army National Guard at the National Guard Bureau announced the location of 10 new Army National Guard cyber protection teams. Colonel Wilson was from the Air Force side, but I'm here to report that these cyber protection teams that will be activated in fiscal year 16 will be hosted by the states of Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio, and then followed up by Georgia and California. So more stuff happening in the cyber world. We're glad to bring you up to date on what's occurring, and we encourage you to follow us on Facebook, listen to our podcast, send us a gift if you want to support our work, and we'll send you the Best of Vietnam Stories booklet that we have available. And again, come back next week. And until then, you are dismissed.